Hey there, welcome to Broadcast to Post. I'm Jeff Sengpiel, CTO at Keycode Media. This is the show where we interview leaders and experts in the AV, broadcast, and post-production spaces. We're giving you the inside tips to grow your media workflows and business today.
Well, we're going to start up. Thank you all for joining us this year at Post NAB with Keycode Media. I'm Mark Siegel. A lot of you I know. It has now been 3 years. I can't believe it's been 3 years since the acquisition of Advanced Broadcast Solutions to Keycode Media. No, I am not retired. I am still doing this, and I'm loving it. Despite all the challenges we have these days with supply chain and tracking down all the stuff that you so kindly purchased from us. Some of us, we talk daily about that. The session here is live production. We have two guests with us, Martin and Ed, to kind of share their experiences, have a little conversation. We'll open it up for questions. Two really unique companies or people working in environments doing live production. So it's not your typical live production. So that's what's going to make it a little bit interesting. And we have Martin Corlett from T-Mobile and Ed McNichol from Ocean Exploration Trust. And you're going like, what type of production what do they do? You know, how do they do production? So I figured we'd start with Martin, tells you a little bit about what he's doing over at T-Mobile and the direction that T-Mobile is going and how what they're doing in live production. And then we'll jump over to Ed. And it's kind of informal, get a little bit out of it, and then we'll open up for questions a little bit later. So Martin, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Mark. So thank you. We have kind of a unique team at T-Mobile. We're part of network technology, and which is mostly engineering, but like most of T-Mobile, we're very media friendly. And with all that's been going on with transitioning to 5G, there was a big push to really communicate exactly what that means and how it's valuable, and then how it can be used in industrial applications, government applications, and smart cities. And so basically everybody on the team that is or is not an engineer had to get schooled up on what it is we're doing, and then we had to be as efficient as possible at communicating. Well, so much of that was in our spaces, which were at HQ and in some of our labs that are sort of like venues. And most of what we were doing was just event coverage, events going on in our spaces, going out into public, doing events like this. And of course, a lot of what we're doing and why we're here today is that, it was born out of COVID. We had a great crew, including a few of my team members that are in front of me here, making content before, but once COVID hit, everybody went home. We didn't. We had to turn all of our spaces into TV studios as quickly as possible, cobbling together everything we had, and it started off very simple, and David and I on cameras that we had 200 feet of SDI and people behind us, untangling us as we went through all the different technology demos that were showing our audience. And that led to, there's got to be a wireless way to do this, and everything we do is about representing our network. So we eventually found out about LiveView, which led me to meeting ABS, Mark, and then we started working. And that was great because not only could we, start immediately get ramped up, showing our demos, bringing back all of our executive briefings that we were doing, sales events, but also all the while, everything the audience saw was on the network. And it was a blast. We were able to do, whether it was on premises or we could just run off and do a demo anywhere. We did demos in Eastern Washington. We did demos in the middle of the Lake Washington. And we were able to not only be very nimble, but also at the same time we were able to say we have a lot of confidence in what our network can do. And things started opening up, in-person visits started happening, and we realized, okay, well, this virtual thing is here to stay. And that's when we started, how do we make it so all of our locations, which we have three, can be a virtual production or an in-person production and not one not hinder the other. So we, once again, Keycode worked with us, and we put robotic cameras in the spaces. My team, and Tom and David, who are in the front here, helped a lot with deciding, just figuring out how we designed this program in a way that was flexible, extremely flexible. And we've been very happy with our products from Telemetrics, which are not only unique, but interesting to work with and blend into the spaces that are kind of high tech. Ross Video, and I guess that's the thing is, even though a lot of what we do is very standard for a lot of folks in this room, for a corporation, a corporate EB, executive briefing center, the innovation started with just working with people who are in live production, and then working with a company like KeyCode who knows live production, and just working with a lot of the standard tools. And then, of course, a few unique use cases here and there. But it's been definitely a nice journey, and once again, I mean, virtual is here to stay. And frankly, it's been great, because even 4 years ago when we had events that were in person, there would always be someone who would say, hey, half of our team is still back in New York. They can't make it. Is there a way they can join us? And our only option was, someone picking up their phone and doing a video call. So the great thing is now, whether it's in person, virtual, or otherwise, we can always have a hybrid event, which, we've got a whole tech team in the back calling the shots on a show, and oftentimes you're getting a better experience than you would have in person anyways. You're getting close-ups. When we do drone demos, you're flying from the eyes of the drone, or if we have demos that are off-site, you get to be there and part of the show as well. And anyways, it's been a great journey, and we're happy that we were able to quickly ramp up, especially with supply chain and everything else, getting creative. Mark and I always talk about we're in a big company and we recognize that, but our most precious resource is time. And we never have enough of it.
That's true. That's awesome.
Is that enough for me?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, we're not going to let you go. We're going to have some questions, obviously. One of the things he mentioned is obviously T-Mobile and the G5 initiative from T-Mobile. Everybody knows they've got the largest network, right? They went into LiveU, which is one of the sponsors of this event here today, bonded cellular over T-Mobile. And they're using the technology, their directive from the top was, okay, let's use our network, so they jumped on it pretty significantly as well.
And I also, you've just reminded me, obviously once we went to PTZ cameras, full production grade switchers, at that point we weren't carrying every camera over the network, but at the end of the line that goes out to the, whether that's a WebEx or a Zoom call or whatever the platform is on, online that people interface with, we're using what a common for sale item, the 5G home internet box at the end of each signal chain. And it's been working extremely well, which is, once again, we're stress testing the hell out of those things, and it's been working great. And we're happy, once again, we're able to always say, yes, we're still broadcasting over our network, and yeah, anyways, thank you.
And that's a Washington-based company, right over in Bellevue. Wonderful. Ed has got, and we'll get back questions and all that stuff, but Ed has also got a very unique use case of how they use our technology, the technology.
Yeah, thanks. I'm Ed McNichol. I'm the video operations manager for the Ocean Exploration Trust. And we live at the other end of the bandwidth paradigm. So where we have somebody representing one of the providers, and it's going to take a little bit to get over the hurdle of explaining the unique nature of our work. And I'm going to try and do that really quickly so you have an idea of what it is we do. This is where we work. This is Nikumaroro Atoll in the Republic of Kiribati, one of the places we were shooting for the Finding Amelia Earhart expedition for National Geographic. This is my office. This is the exploration vessel Nautilus, 211 feet long, 48 souls on board. This is my camera platform. This is the remotely operated vehicle Hercules with a $125,000 high definition, not 4K, Zeus Plus camera on it. It's got 7 other camera systems as well. This is us headed to work, up to 3¾ miles below the surface of the sea. It takes us about 4.5 hours to get there. This is what I do. This is 3 shipping containers you might see driving down I-5, and they mold together to form our ROV control room, which is almost exclusively sourced from KeyCode Media. They've been fantastic partners on this entire project. There are 36 cameras and 28 monitors that we control. Here's our work mode, and this is a part I'm interested in. We have 4 52 rack unit racks, tallest racks I've ever put in any system. I can't reach the top. They're about 8 feet tall. And we have a video engineer who sits there. There's 4 of those racks. So this is what we do. We take giant remotely operated vehicles, we put them at the bottom of the ocean, and we explore parts of the planet that no human has ever seen before. Some of what we're doing may be the first and only time that humans see this organism or this geology. So that's what we do and where we do it. And it's a lot easier to explain with those. So like others, we experienced challenges with COVID and had to do some pivoting, as you might expect. One of the things we had to do was reduce the number of people on board. We went from 48 down to about 22, which meant that everybody who was directing operations was on shore. We send back four streams, three of them 24 hours a day, continuously. So we start operations in February, March, and we stream usually until Christmas without a break. Vessels in port right now in University of Hawaii port in Honolulu. We sail tomorrow. If you go to nautiluslive.org, you can see all three of our live camera streams from the vessel. So we're broadcasting from, you know, the most remote parts of the world. The closest humans to us are frequently on the International Space Station, 211 miles above us. So that's remote production.
How do you get the signal from there to where it
has to
be?
Well, what we do is we use a 2.4 meter stabilized CTEL 9711H dish that has both C and KU band. We get 20 megabit bidirectional. Your phone has more bandwidth than that. That's shared amongst 48 people and costs $56,000 a month for the bandwidth.
See, so T-Mobile ain't that bad of a deal.
Right, right. So what we were able to do was, working with Key Code and their vendor, RTS, was leverage a technology called V-Link that lets anybody connect to our intercom system using either an iOS app, a Mac app, a Windows app, a web interface. It's really technology agnostic, and it's as if you're sitting next to me on the boat. It's a very loud environment. Everybody in the control van is on headset. Everything we do and say is broadcast 24 hours a day. I normally spend 6 months a year at sea, live on air, and then I get my cursing in the other 6 months of the year when I'm home. So we're able to use V-Link to directly connect people, and our streams, we use six different Makito encoders to get streams back to our land drop in Rhode Island. And we were able to, using a variety of technologies, get low latency feeds. So people at their home, now we still have to go 22,000 miles up to a geostationary satellite, 22,000 miles down, so we have speed of light to account for. But people were seeing things 2 to 4 seconds after they happened in real time. So a scientist in Prague could be saying, pick up that rock to the left. No, not that one right there. And not have, normally they would travel and come out to sea with us. So we're able to do a pivot using that type of technology. We have lots and lots of challenges. The thing I hope you take away from this is, if you imagine what happens for my team, we only have three video engineers on the boat. Two young professionals who are great at shooting and an old guy to fix stuff.
Who's the old guy to fix stuff?
Well, it's usually me or a senior engineer. Jack Clausen from Microsoft Studios has come out and worked with us. Derek Kay has come out and worked with us. Staffing is a huge issue. I need a senior engineer who is comfortable enough in video jazz to trust that they can fix anything. I've been on a boat where the satellite broke. I've had no education at that point in my career in satellite communications. Am I qualified to fix that? No. Am I the best candidate on the boat to do it? Yes. You're going to learn satellite today. So you have to be able to do that. So, you know, that kind of staffing is hard. And we're asking people to leave their lives for up to 3 months. It's very hard. And the way I solve that is by carrying business cards everywhere.
So this is a networking opportunity,
yes,
for everybody.
Right here.
See, this is what we bring to you. He's asking for help. Who needs help?
We also lag really far behind in technology, and this is a huge threat to what my company does. As the focus is on cloud and spinning up AWS instances, et cetera,
We're not going to do that. At best, what I can do, I just did this with a client. We had a 150 terabyte data set. They needed 5 copies. You know, I got Amazon Edge Snowball devices, copied everything to them, shipped it to them, let them put it in the cloud. So storage content delivery is a huge thing, but staying relevant. Our imagers run 10 to 15 years behind the world because we're putting them in a titanium housing that is rated to withstand 8,800 pounds per square inch of pressure. So if you have a camera that occasionally overheats in Seattle, you're not going to get 3 minutes of operation, let alone our dives are normally 18 to 40 hours long. So, you know, at a cost per day in the $70,000 to $100,000 range. If we have to go back to port for a reason, we lose usually 2 operational weeks. So those are a lot of the challenges that we're facing in our certainly unique live production. We definitely have a preference for enterprise-level modular gear that uses components that are replaceable. We have sent people out with 40 by 40 commodity routers, and we always send them with 2. Here's your backup plan. When that one dies, you put this one in.
Everybody knows the answer.
Yeah, so where do you get those routers from? Right here. So that's a little peek into my world and some of the ways we address the technology challenges we had and the COVID pivot we had to make.
So aren't those city council meetings exciting?
I'm just joking. No, they are. Two very unique kind of applications. I think Ed kind of went into a little bit of depth. Maybe I'll go back to Martin and ask, you know, what type of projects, something recent that you've worked on that is a little bit unique. I know we've done a lot of system upgrades within the last 2 years, but something that was, was a little bit unique.
It's hard to draft in after Ed here. That was amazing. Thank you for
the
story.
But he thinks yours is amazing, too.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think probably off the top, our CTO wanted to have a special event. Every time that there's a meeting with the top brass, they want something interesting to happen. So it ultimately landed on being a technology demo that happened in the middle of Lake Washington. Anyone that's worked with RF and worked with cellular, there's a phrase amongst the engineers that they're afraid of water. There's more things get erratic. We had the one privilege again of at least checking in with the market engineers that actually work on the towers and said, hey, is everything good? Are we okay? Because one thing we noticed really quickly, the first time we took a boat out, especially near where people tailgated around the UW, was the service needed help. And so anyone can make some phone calls and they can get to the markets. They are reachable and say, hey, we have a major problem here. And one of the ones I was surprised with was by the UW, that you think all the people that park their boats out there, they want to have coverage. So anyhow, at the end of the day, we had a big event with college students in the UW, and they wanted to have, hey, by the way, we're out there on the boat. And we brought our live view packs, and we were able to do the technology demo out there. And I feel, it just feels very, very underwhelming compared to what we just went through. But for us, it was a hit, it was a success, and I certainly appreciate David and Tom's assistance on those things. I mean, you're only as good as your team, but and the network held out. And always, one thing that's nice about what our little funky network technology team does is it gets a lot of visibility, but everywhere we go with some interesting field demo, we always improve the network for the customers. Because every time they say, hey, by the way, we analyze them based on what we're seeing, we're gonna leave it the way we had it for that, which feels good that we're, you know, we were always trying to communicate something and then help out. But anyway, that's probably one of the better wins we've had lately.
Can you answer that question? Or you kind of already answered something. He covered kind of everything. This is production, but it's kind of a little bit different extreme than whether you're in a studio or in a chamber or, you know, at a sporting venue or something like that. We're still capturing multiple camera angles with devices and transmitting them. We see a pretty big move in the future to cloud-based production. You're going to say, ooh, that cloud, isn't that expensive? Well, you're going to see some new strategies and ways of doing that. You're going to hear upstairs probably from every vendor that's a direction that they're seriously looking at going because they want the SaaS model,
They want to hit you every month. They don't want you. They don't want you once, right? T-Mobile? No.
Well, and that's the hardest one for us, really, is that is going back to all the vendors that are exhibiting here today, is that a lot of these services are great, but the hardest thing for us to get buy-in is operating expenses.
Correct.
We need capital expenses, which is, and in all the experienced people on our team, we've always leaned hardware to rely on things, but you're right. A lighter footprint, a more flexible footprint, which is more on that cloud side and less of a stack of gear, is nice. Yeah.
So yeah, don't forget to share that information upstairs. Capital expense, capital. That's okay. We've got a few minutes left. I figured I'd open up the floor if anybody had any questions. Yes, sir.
I've got an observation that as a professional in the industry, I had to keep up with all of this. COVID forced the entire globe to do my job and the job of an AV and in all the departments. So now all the civilians believe that they are now an entire production company because they've been on a Zoom call. What does that mean for us in the industry of broadcast now that the civilians have been given all of the tools and toys that we used to spend tens of thousands of dollars on, and they believe they are now Scorsese?
Yeah. Go for it, Ed.
I'll give that a shot because I'm a business owner, and I think this is year 40 working in video for me, and reinvention number 27 of my career. I was a post-production supervisor and an editor, and I worked for Sony, and I did all that other stuff. So you have to reinvent yourself, and you have to let your clients know now, yes, you can do that. I can do it correctly and guarantee a result. I've been doing this for this long. I know what the problems are. I know that building. I know where the fiber drops are. And they're like, what's fiber? And you're like, well, you don't know, you know. And yeah, it's harder to sell yourself now. I think the democratization of video was an amazing transition for like you and I to go through, Sky. And it's fantastic to see so many young people when the barrier to entry used to be $1.5 million to build an edit suite. And now you can do it on your phone. That's fantastic. But being able to produce effective media that motivates people to act and meets your goals is a very different story than getting views. Nautilus Live, this client we have, our live streams had 20 million viewers last year. But you know, that's just the content. Any monkey, if you could show that, you're going to get viewers. It's nothing special we're doing. But if you're able to get your client, and the huge thing for me as a business owner is value add. I know you asked for this, this, and this. I brought three of my cameras from home so you would have some ISO records later. Or I'm doing this. I'm, you know, always above and beyond expectation. And I do whatever is in the client's best interest, not to go into a mentoring session. Not my best interest. If I have their best interest at heart, I'm always invited back.
I think to answer, I'll jump in a little bit on the question as well. We have to up our game. Everybody in the room is day by day, hour by hour, getting a little bit older. And there's always somebody behind us, right? So we have to continue to learn. We have to continue to push ourselves, right? The expectation is higher because people are more familiar with how easy it is. My 11-year-old granddaughter can run circles around me. She sits and edits on her phone. She produces shows. She says, Papa, look at what I did. And I'm going like, how the hell did you do that? Right? It's the challenge. The tools are out there. There are a lot of tools out there. To think that the tools that you used 4 years ago, 5 years ago, are still the current right tool sets out there, it's not true. Our industry moves at a very rapid rate, and there's some really good tools out there to help the workflows go better, to help you be more creative, and to do it actually more cost effectively, right? The cost of entry that Ed brought up is much lower. You want to add anything, Martin?
Sure, because I'm kind of on that younger side of it, and you know what my colleagues in front of me here can say, there's definitely, from a corporate perspective, you know, the patience is low. They know about, if it's FaceTime. We've got FaceTime. Why can't we just be like FaceTime? You know, and there's so much involved in routing and, you know, can you patch in that audio feed? Can you patch in that one? Oh, can you route all this and turn it upside down and then send it to this other group? And there's a lot of demands that come up, and there isn't a lot of understanding about what it is we're doing. But it, like Mark said, we have to constantly up our game and be flexible. And at the same time, within our group, we've expanded and have gotten more support because we are every day we're trying to make a better, more polished show. And then when people say, wow, we thought this was just going to be another Zoom call, you know, where they just throw a wide camera in the back of the room like our other people do, you know, in the company. And so it is moving the needle. People do appreciate production value when they see it. But you're right, it's just like, I mean, I came from still photography and was a video editor to begin with. And then all of a sudden people, you know, it's like you had a medium format camera, Hasselblad, and that's out, you know. But we had to change. You know, I had to learn video. Yeah. Anyways, go ahead.
Awesome. 45 minutes just flew by. We are at the end of our little presentation. If you have any questions, feel free to come up and ask Martin, introduce yourself, and ask Ed. If you're looking for a gig, get your card out, right? That's what it's about.
Thanks for watching Broadcast to Post. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast to receive future episodes. Follow Key Code Media on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram to receive news on additional AV, broadcast, and post-production technology content. See you next time, folks.